It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic Chimeras Comics. Now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you, it's Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, John Clark. With me is 85% always is my co-host. And Elliot Toronto is back. If one person was listening to the show in Vietnam, I'd be really proud.
That would be awesome.
And that one person would be like, he knows me.
Right? Incredible.
This would be that person's favorite day ever. It's good to see. We've actually seen a lot of Elliot. Elliot was at the Oh Yeah party last week, which we mentioned. Well, I don't think there is too much.
I haven't found a limit yet.
No.
A limit of what?
Of enough of you.
You in our life.
Do you have people in your past that just said, I've had enough of you?
And captain.
Then left?
Yes.
Yes.
They tend to be all female as well. Right. So, you know.
Much more intimate relationships.
Well, not even intimate. Like,
oh,
you know,
wow.
Yeah, it's a casual relationship.
Pretty much even casual. They go, no, you go home now.
No,
you
know, all right.
I've had enough of you.
Yeah, okay.
I used to have a lot of that of women in bars after about an hour. I'm like, I'm really making a connection. And they're like, shut up.
It's like time to go.
Yeah, we were on two opposite tracks the entire time.
Yeah, that's such is life.
Yes, but I wanted Elliot to come over again, not only because we like to have him over, but it's another one of those weeks where everybody lost their goddamn mind.
Yeah,
and Elliot,
the internet.
Elliot, you kind of were at the epicenter of it. I know you were on WGN this week talking about it, but also your Facebook feed and your Twitter feed kind of exploded with
debate about it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't know. I guess I didn't pay attention that much in previews this month, but, you know, well, we haven't done the order yet, but, I saw it on Elliot's Facebook and I was like, oh, what's this? And cause he had like 58 comments and I was like, okay, I'll jump in here.
Well, Elliot, then as the expert, do you want to explain what happened?
Well, for those who weren't on social media and voicing their opinions, cause everybody had one.
Yeah.
Actually, for people who live in the real world, we're talking not folks who live on social media, because that seems to be...
People who go outside.
Yes, people who go outside. For all of you reasonable folk, this is what happened.
Yes.
So DC Comics really is releasing a number of Joker variant covers for the different Batman books. Pretty much the whole, you know, we're going to do the Joker and everything because the Joker sells.
Right.
Exactly. They did Harley Quinn 1 month, like Flash, Green Lantern, all these books.
Right.
So
and Joker's in Batman right now, so he's got a lot of attention.
Right. So they did Raphael Albuquerque, the incredibly talented wonderful Raphael Albuquerque. And I have nothing but the utmost respect for him. The dude's incredible. Actually created this really... Okay. Artistically speaking, an awesome Joker variant featuring the Joker as he appeared in The Killing Joke, the Brian Bolland, Alan Moore story.
Probably the most arguably famous Joker story.
Yeah, one of the most celebrated comic stories, I think, in history.
Of its time.
Never been out of print.
Never. And then, if you've read The Killing Joke, you know what happens in The Killing Joke, that the Joker shoots and cripples Barbara Gordon and then does a whole bunch of unspeakable things to her. Joker reappears on the cover of Batgirl. Issue number, is this supposed to be
issue 41? I believe it's
41.
Next month, it'll be the April issue.
April issue of Batgirl, where he's in that same outfit and he has his arm around Barbara and he's holding a gun in one hand, and he's like painting her face with the Joker red smile.
Yeah.
And she has a look of terror in her eyes.
Yeah.
And she's even crying.
It's a very, I use the word rapey image.
It's if you know
that
story,
yeah.
Otherwise, you might think that she's just a crying little girl who's scared of the Joker doing something to her,
mm-hmm.
which is essentially what all the fan bros were saying.
Yeah.
You know, they were going like, oh, well, you know, the Joker's like, you know, the ultimate boogeyman, you know. If she's not smart, you know, she would be, if she were dumb, she'd be snarling at him, but she's smart, she should be afraid. So it's one of those, on the surface, what was happening, was you had the hero of the book being being made to look like she's afraid of the villain.
Yeah.
On the cover of her own book.
Yeah.
And you had folks who were offended by it because she's a female character. There aren't that many female characters in comics.
Yep.
On top of that, you know, they're marketing this book to teenagers. They're wanting her to be like this example of a positive, strong female yep. role model. And they're kind of like demeaning her on the cover of her own book.
Yeah.
Now, that's the one side. On the other side, you have the folks who are defending the artistic vision of the artist. And again, I'm going to say this again. It is a stunning cover. It is a really powerful cover.
Yeah.
You look at that cover, it makes you uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It made me uncomfortable.
Right. Yeah. It's deliberately. Scary. Yeah. And you know what, too? This is coming off of months and months of controversy after controversy from both companies, DC and Marvel, targeting women's issues, where it's, you know, the Spider-Woman variant a couple months ago when they launched that Spider-Woman number one that got all the crazy...
Yeah, the Milo Manara cover.
Yeah, and it's just like, so this isn't anything new, but I think the part of the outrage comes from it's just like, all right, DC, like, how many months in a row are you guys going to do this kind of really ignorant stuff without really kind of thinking about the greater message maybe they're sending in these books.
Right, but that being said, now, is the audience primed for outrage if they've gotten controversy after controversy?
I think people are looking for something to be outraged about, but I don't think this is something it's such a stretch why people are upset. Like, as soon as I saw the cover, I'm like, oh, yes, I understand why this is such a heated topic. It's not like they're groping for something. You know, it's not like they're, like, reaching for it.
Bad choice of words.
Yeah, bad. Sorry, my bad.
So, yeah, but to be fair, I think I'm actually, this might be a good debate, because I'm actually coming down on the other side of this debate. In Death of the Family, we had a Batgirl cover with her painted like the Joker. We didn't have the Joker on that cover, but that was the main cover. This is a variant cover.
Yeah.
Which means there'll be a few thousand copies of it out.
Yeah, and I guess,
they decided not to. They're not going to publish it.
I guess the backlash was so overwhelming. DC actually canceled the book. I've actually received probably 14 phone calls since Tuesday. People asking if I have the variant. It's like, look, they canceled it. Like, I think people don't know how early we get the comics. We get the comics a day ahead of when they're released. So I get them the Tuesday before they come out. And people are, oh, I want that cover. You're going to get it, right? I'm like, they canceled it. Yeah, but you got the orders and you're going to get it, right? No, DC's going to incinerate those covers. Like, no one's ever going to get those covers. You know, that's the only one.
I don't think they've even been printed yet.
No, they haven't been printed yet.
Yeah, I think by now they're printed, because they're probably already at the warehouse and shipped.
Not necessarily, because as you said, this is an April book. So you've got a few weeks. Usually the main printers are everybody's on the weekly schedule, just like you are.
Yeah.
So I don't think books get printed until about 2 or 3 weeks before.
Oh, so you don't even think they've been printed yet? I kind of figured by now they have to be somewhere. No, or at least they're printing some of the books.
I'm telling you, because if they're printed and somebody on eBay. Has them, they will those come things out, yeah. are going to be huge.
I gotta say,
on eBay.
You know, a good example of this kind of like industry. Diamond, the distributor for the comics, comes in every once in a while and will tell us, oh, destroy this book or destroy that book. And the last time something like this happened that I can remember, stuff like this happens all the time, this controversy stuff, but the last time an order to destroy material came in was the issue of Batman and Robin, the All-Star Batman and Robin.
With the swearing that was supposed to be blacked out, but it wasn't.
Yeah.
I've got one of those.
Yeah, same thing. So basically what happened was Frank Miller wrote a bunch of dirty words in his Batman book. And the way they print them is the inker goes over them with layers on the computer, several layers to black out the words completely so you can't see them. Well, the inker must have not done, or they got past DC, and they actually printed this book where they must have gone over just once. But the ink of the words was darker than the black.
You can see it underneath the black bar.
Clearly read every filthy word. And they were vile. I mean, this guy has mental problems. And
something happened to Frank Miller, and it wasn't just 9/11.
Yeah. Well, this was after 9/11, so this is, you know, entirely possible. But so all the comic book stores received this book, and then like a day later we all got the email from Diamond saying delete the book or destroy them. And well, we weren't idiots, so we all took copies and we sold them on eBay because we're not idiots. And the previous owner of the store we were at made a killing. Because, you know, these things are going for like 50, 60, 80 bucks online. He's got a box of them sitting somewhere still, probably. Because that was a hot book. We had probably 100 of them on order. So he sold, even if he sold
it. Yeah, it was a well-selling book. And it was all of them. It wasn't like there was one
every single one. Right. And then, so what they do is they, we destroy, quote unquote, destroy the books that they sent. And then the next week they shipped us the correct copies we were supposed to sell. So we ended up selling the regular copies, or I guess the approved copies. But yeah, you're supposed to destroy them. And like Elliot said, I don't know where you got yours, but they're all over eBay. You could still find them on eBay.
Right, but this is not going to come out at
all. Like, yeah, like it said, you know, if it was going to come out, they'd be on eBay or Craigslist.
Yeah, they would be out now. At least pre-orders.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the thing about the book, again, and I think enough has been said about the content of the book, about what the cover is saying.
Right. And to be fair, the content of the book, this scene is not going to happen. The Joker's not in this issue.
No, yeah. This is just a variant cover.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a variant cover. Has nothing to do with
the interior material. As you said, they did Harley. They did The Flash 2 months ago. Yeah. The Flash was on every book of the DC Universe. He didn't appear in those books.
Yeah. Right.
The thing is that the one thing I guess I want to focus on, because I've spoken about this ad nauseum now, it's just how ridiculous everyone has gotten over the issue of a variant cover. And you know, on the one hand, I mean, I sympathize for those who were really upset by the cover, and had an objection to it. I sympathize. Actually, if I'm going to side anywhere, it will be with them.
Agreed.
And the way the fan bros keep just going on and on and on about censorship and this vocal minority that is ruining comics for them and blah, blah, blah. It's getting ridiculous.
Yeah.
And how many of them were going to buy this book?
Exactly. Yeah. And that's what I was going to say. That's the craziest thing is variants. The market for variants is not what it used to be even 10 years ago. So all these people.
Because every book does one.
Yeah, exactly. There's several variants for most titles now. But like you said, everyone's so upset about it. Half those people probably aren't even reading Batgirl monthly. The people who are most upset about this book because the cover is controversial or whatever are the people who are probably reading the book monthly and like, hey, this isn't the kind of material we want on our variant covers. You know, and then DC even had to come out and say, look, because everyone was then slamming the writers and the editorial for this. And they're like, look, they farm these variant covers out months in advance. You know, DC's probably got the next 3 months of variants planned. And they've probably, most of them, they've at least hired artists to produce those books. So it's not even up to the people who are writing or editing this book saying, yeah, make a Joker cover and make it rapey and creepy and stuff. Like, this wasn't like an edict that came down from the people working.
Yeah, that sounds like a DiDio session.
Make it creepy, make it fast, and kill Nightwing.
Right. It hits all his favorite points.
But it's, and Cameron Stewart, the writer of Batgirl, even said he didn't want that cover on his book. And it should be said, the reason they pulled the cover was not because anyone threatened the writer or the artist. No one even threatened Raphael Albuquerque. It was the people who were in favor of the cover were threatening the people who were against the cover.
Yeah, and that's the sickest thing is this, like, is it nerd bashing or whatever that's going on? This, like, trolling on the internet where it's like,
people like are Gamergate.
Just, yeah, like this that, kind yeah. of shit where it's just like, you know, kids, when I was a kid, all the quote-unquote nerds, it was always like, it would be awesome if, like, girls were into this stuff. And then we
and find... guys stopped hitting me.
Yeah. Then we find girls that are into this stuff, and the same nerds who are like, oh, I wish girls liked this stuff, are, like, bashing girls who like this stuff. It's like, well, come on, think about what you're doing. Like, don't you want to have stuff in common with, like, a girlfriend or, like, a female friend? Like, this did not happen when I was a kid. I had no girls that were into, like, Spider-Man.
Yeah, there were no girls that cared about what happened on the cover of a Batman comic.
Or if they were, they weren't talking to me. And it's something where it's just like, you know, the last thing
your
I would
think of. Your sister was talking to you.
Yeah, but I didn't want her to talk to me at that age. We didn't get along too well in the young years. But it's something where it's just like, the last thing on my mind would be like, you know, it's like you see a girl buy a comic, you're like, I wonder, is she buying it for, like, a boyfriend? Like, this is awesome. Like, maybe she's reading this. Like, you should be happy that the community is growing beyond just, you know, you and your same exact carbon copy friends, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's what's interesting about this is that there are new demands that there weren't before. I understand why someone would be offended by it, but I think my problem with the cover is it's a little inside baseball. I didn't find the cover that offensive. What was offensive about it is if because it it is a reference to another book that you would have had to have read,
yeah,
to a scene in that book and to the subtext of what that scene was. Because what people really have an issue with is not so much that Joker shoots her, but that
what when comes after
when commit, which we don't know, it happens off screen.
Yeah, it's ambiguous.
All we see are naked pictures of Barbara that he's torturing Commissioner Gordon with, and a lot of people say, "Well, that means Barbara was raped." And whether Alan Moore decided that she was or wasn't, it's not in that book. So you have to take four steps, I think, to get really offended by this. And what they're saying is, "Oh, well, young girls will come in."
Okay, I'm gonna
go ahead.
You don't need four steps to be offended. Maybe two, but not four. I think if my daughter was shot and undressed and had pictures taken of her, and I had to recall that, I would be really, even if he doesn't touch her. But
yeah.
But the point, I think, to the point that you're saying, mm-hmm, which is a valid point, you're right. Even if it is an inside baseball type thing, and let's face it, the reference is gotten by a lot of folks, and
yeah,
it's those folks, I'm telling you, and this is the part that pisses me off the most, is that you have, I mean, I'm going to keep using this term because I hate how people throw this bullshit, immature, sexist, gatekeeper mentality on fanboys.
Yeah.
I think fanboys are generally decent guys.
Yeah, yeah.
Like fangirls. So I call them fan bros.
There you go.
Or fan dude bros.
Yeah.
You know, because those jerky kind of guys.
Yeah.
So these fan bros,
they're like the jockey nerds, which
yeah,
yeah,
seemed like it was never going to happen.
And we've seen it.
Right.
Yeah. But there's, you know what?
But they know what that cover represents.
Yeah.
They know what happened in that story. And you know what? And they're okay with the idea of that being represented again. And on top of that, they insist that if Joker and Barbara and Batgirl ever hooked up again and she was ever like his captive, that's the way she would react, that she would be crying, she would be terrified.
Yeah.
But we've had stories, as you said, Death of the Family, Gail Simone, who did a great run of Batgirl before this new run, she had the meat and she had to get, and she was faced with that.
Yeah,
because it still happened before the new 52,
yeah,
wiped out everything,
you know,
but she fought her way through it.
Mm-hmm.
So we've already proven that it wouldn't be that much. My other issue is, I don't have a problem with the hero being scared on the cover. When I think about 70s comics, every 70s comic I can think of is a hero scared on the cover. That was the trope back then, was they were in the trap and it didn't look like they were going to get out, and you bought it to see them get out.
Yeah.
It really wasn't until the 90s and 2000s where the hero looked badass on every cover.
Right.
I mean, you know, Batman's never scared, but every single issue of Batman and Detective, he's terrified and there's a word balloon going,
explaining
who is this
why
coming to get me?
Yeah.
But that was back then. I mean, let's talk about now, and we're talking about a changing market.
Yeah.
We're talking about
right
new readers, we're talking about younger readers, and I had plenty of, like, on my Facebook page, I had, you know, that the cover debate going on.
Yeah.
You know, where I had a female friend of mine who was making her argument, saying that you never see Batman in peril on covers, and she posted all these more recent covers. And then this guy who was arguing with her said, well, no. And he posted all these great Jim Aparo and
yeah,
Neil Adams covers where it did show Batman afraid.
Yeah.
But again, we're talking about the current market
current
right
era
now.
And that's another point. Somebody posted, I probably saw it on yours. It was some fan, I think. Like I said, I wasn't too sure. It was Doomsday and Superman cover, and it was the same pose.
Yeah.
Doomsday creeping behind Superman, and Superman looking all scared and worried. And as soon as I saw that cover, I said, this is never a cover DC would ever publish. Mm. DC would never publish a cover that made Superman look as weak and vulnerable as they made Batgirl look.
Well, you got a point, because going back to those Batman covers, and I'm going to go back on my own point because you've opened my eyes to that. The emotion on those 70s covers is shock.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not helplessness.
It's not helplessness and terror.
And there is a terror I'm fine with. I mean, EC comics are terror.
Oh yeah.
But it is the passivity.
Yeah.
Of her on that cover.
I mean, it would be like DC doing a variant cover showing Major Force walking away from the refrigerator he stuffed Kyle Rayner's girlfriend in. And that's something where there's been enough outlash, and that was, what, 10 years ago, maybe?
20.
20?
Yeah, that's like... That's
in the 90s.
That's
like
one of Kyle's first stories.
I think
so,
it's like his third issue. But that was something where it's just like, Tina and Lisa were talking about it, where there's, it's like a hashtag or, I don't know, it's some kind of thing on the internet with like girls in refrigerators.
There's a whole blog.
It's a blog about it.
Yeah, that's like Gail Simone's blog.
Gail Simone did this. Yeah. And that's something too, where it's the same thing where it's just like, look, they wrote this story, not even really caring about what was happening in it or thinking of the large implications. And it's something where it's just like, it's carried this like offensive tone throughout the years. And the
it's
same
become
thing
a jump the shark for
right. And I
misogyny in comics.
Yes. Right. And I think it's something where, you know, it would be distasteful for them to do a cover that looked like that. And the same thing, like you said, and especially in Batgirl's own title, you know, a book where it's, you know, that's the only thing DC could think of to do for a Joker variant for that month was, well, do the, you know, the killing joke. That'll be funny or clever or something. You know, it's like, you know, like I said, it's tricky. It's not so cut and dry until you see the image and you're just like, oh, guys, this might not have been a good idea.
But then, again, if you want to do the killing joke, okay, you saw that image. It's been going around. It's someone took that image of Barbara and they tweaked it just a little bit.
Yeah, I thought the artist did that.
Yeah. No, it was somebody else. Someone else
photoshopped. Yeah.
Where they got rid of the tear.
Yeah.
They changed her eye position. Instead of looking straight ahead, her eyes are like kind of like she's looking at the Joker out of the corner of her eye, and her brow is furrowed.
Yeah.
Not so much like in fear, but she's like, she's pissed.
Yeah.
Like she goes, look, I know you've got me right now, and I can't do anything right now, but the moment I get a chance, I'm going to kick your ass.
She's thinking of a way out of it.
Yeah.
It's a subtle change, but it changes the entire, I think it changes the entire tone.
And are you okay with that?
That I would have said, there you go.
Yeah.
That would have worked.
And honestly, that's what I thought DC was going to do. They were just going to have Albuquerque just change the cover. I mean, that's 10 minutes in Photoshop. This guy's a pro. He can knock it out. And then that's the cover they then release. But, you know, they just pulled the whole thing just to kind of avoid the controversy, you know? But it's like, that's the point we're at. You know, it's the same thing happened with that Mila Manera book we were talking about, that Spider-Woman, where...
Yeah, and that I had more of an issue with, because that was... It was obvious, objectifying.
And that's the thing. My only problem with that was, you know, everyone went nuts for that particular cover. But this guy's been drawing crazy shit like this for years.
Well, that's how he draws. He draws
erotica.
That's what I'm
saying. It's like, you know, why this dude even works at Marvel or DC is insane. This guy writes and draws erotic comics. It's like, what do we have? You know, there's a cover of X-Men, and it's all the X-Men, the female X-Men, they're all in like a pool. Kitty Pryde's a teenager, you know, and at the time she joined the X-Men, she was like 13, and they're all kind of like half naked, like rolling around on each other. And it's like, this is like pornography. It's like, why is this on the cover of a Marvel comic book that's supposed to, and it's on the trade for the, it's a trade paperback featuring like X-Men women stories. So it's like, oh, here's all the stuff from like 70s, 80s, 90s, whatever. And it's like, you know, stories about Storm, stories about Jean Grey or Rogue or whoever, collected in this edition. And then Marvel chooses for the trade paperback cover this like pervy fucking cover. And it's like, dude, you couldn't grab like a Art Adams, or there's nothing else you could have grabbed that like would have been a little bit more appropriate.
Well, they could have gotten Greg Land, who
straight up
would just get some women and shoot pictures of them.
Yeah, you know? No, instead of you doing that, that's giving the guy too much credit. Greg Land Google searches, and they've caught him using pornography. He traces pornography on some of his covers, to where it's like there's like straight up like spread eagle images of like Supreme Power books, where it's just like, I've seen people be like, hey, look, here's all the things he's copying, and like images of wrestlers, images of Gladiator, like, well, how that dude doesn't have as a job.
I always remember there was a cover of Ultimate Fantastic Four where he drew Doom, and he just drew the sideshow statue.
Yeah, man. And it's just like, and Marvel pays that dude a fortune. Yeah.
But then here's the question with these covers. Do you think that Marvel and DC are courting controversy to get the press? Because a variant cover is something you can easily yank rather than a plot
maybe.
Point in the book
okay.
that might cause
knowing,
problems.
Knowing what I know about the production schedule, and knowing what I know about, well, let's face it, DC and Marvel are now publicly traded companies.
They're Disney and Warner Brothers.
Brothers. They're not, I'm telling you, this shit's happening purely by accident.
Yeah.
This is like, they are like, remember the Orson Scott Card controversy?
Oh, yeah.
For
oh,
Superman?
Yeah, yeah.
Remember?
Yeah.
And how totally taken by surprise they were that people were going to have an issue with him doing Superman, especially after he did that two Iron Man miniseries from Marvel.
Which sold.
But no one talked about that. No one seemed to have an issue. So they're like, hey, let's Orson Scott Card have him do Superman, and boom!
It becomes a huge
issue. And that's all a matter of like when things go viral, because it wasn't like he just said that, and that's also what killed the Ender's Game movie.
Yeah,
was the same thing. They pulled him off Superman,
trilogy, right?
Well, and plus the movie sucked.
Well, so. That's I wouldn't know because I'm one of the millions of people that didn't see it.
I read the books, the FBI can come after me. I saw a buddy of mine gave me one of the pirated copies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because I just did not want to give any money to this thing. And I remember watching it and going, "Man, talk about taking a great movie and crapping on it."
Yeah,
you know.
I just remember Harrison Ford trying to defend it, and he did it in the most Harrison Ford way. He's like, "Movie's not about that."
Well,
in my mind, he got up and left the room.
Yeah,
I mean, I'll give him that, but yeah, they kind of made the movie more about him than it was about Ender.
The kid,
in some cases. And I'm going that way, but it doesn't. I know these folks. I mean, it's not like they're going, "Hey, let's come up with the most. Let's come up with something that's going to really piss people off and get people to talk about it."
Yeah, I think they'd be more scared to do that because they'd go too far. I think this is something where it's like it's clearly a mistake. DC did the right thing; they pulled the book, and it's something where had they tried to like chase the controversy, they would have fucked themselves.
But they
royally did.
Remember, they did chase the controversy. Is everyone already forgetting the marijuana-scented scratch and sniff cover?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I actually thought that was...
And that's deliberately chasing.
See, that's chasing.
Absolutely, because they put out press releases. They interviewed Amanda Connor and Jimmy Palmiotti, and they were like...
Flip through that book. The entire book's full of weed jokes. The entire book.
Yeah, and they said, like, the smell came through the poly bag.
Yeah,
You ordered it, right?
Yeah, we ordered everything Harley Quinn. It sold, and it was something where it was just like, yep, these books, and it's just like... It's something where you're right. That's a perfect example. And like you said, 2 months later, and we're like, yeah, DC doesn't chase it. It's just like, well, they did. This is how horrific my memory is. But you're absolutely right.
It's from that marijuana bag.
That's why. Yeah.
He ordered a lot of those books.
Yeah, so many.
Just that one diamond box opening.
Well, paper.
I just imagine Stephen passed out.
It burns.
Before that Tuesday.
It burns so quickly. Yeah. Good times.
And then mixed with the ink.
Oh, yeah, so it's especially.
And poly bags, that chemical smell.
That can't be good.
No.
So there you go.
Yeah.
And companies do that. Companies try to, you can tell when they're trying to court controversy to get some buzz going. And
Well, threatening to kill characters is definitely a way of doing it. Killing characters is a way of courting controversy.
Yeah. Well, like I said, and this is huge spoilery, people, so maybe, I don't know, listen to this in like a week. They killed Donatello in the newest Ninja Turtle book.
No!
Yeah. Really? And it's something we were talking
about. Still alive in every other form of media.
Yeah, yeah, right?
Say, I saw him on a bag of chips at the
school. Yeah, exactly. He's on my bowl of cereal.
I saw him on Nickelodeon an hour ago. Right? He looked fine.
But, I think
he was voiced by Pinky. He was doing okay.
He's fine. But I think that's something where, it's the same thing. It's just like, the bigger companies will do, there's press releases. They're like, we're going to kill a member of the Fantastic Four. And then everyone goes nuts for months speculating who it's going to be. And then everyone jacks their sale prices up and all this stuff. And then IDW kills Donatello. It's not solicited. It's not, they don't mention it. A press release, it happens. And that book, good luck. Go and try and find it for less than $50.
Oh, by the way, speaking about the killing a character in the Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
In case Jonathan Hickman is reading this, listening to this, Jonathan, you fucking lied to me. I knew you were killing Johnny Storm. I knew you were going to do it. You said you weren't doing it. You insisted it wasn't him, and then it ended up being him.
Oh, yeah.
And then I said, you're bringing him back, aren't you? And he insisted, no, Johnny Storm is dead. Johnny Storm is really dead.
Uh-huh.
He lied to my face.
Twice.
I realized it was Johnny Storm because he was the only member of the Fantastic Four who hadn't died.
Who hadn't ever been killed.
They
they'd all been killed
off
at one
point. And if you read that book, there's enough hints throughout the book that it was going to be Johnny
and when
Storm
you read that, I love that run, and I got the omnibuses and read it straight through.
Yeah.
And it's clearly a story where the beginning is Johnny Storm dying and the end is him coming back. Mm-hmm. It's not like a year later they were like, the fans really want him back.
Yeah, he knew what he was doing. And that's the thing, too, especially with these corporate characters, it's like, oh, I'm going to kill a character in the Fantastic Four and I won't bring him back. And it's just like, uh-huh. And then, you're not writing that book forever, pal. So it's like the second, maybe you don't bring him back, but the second you're off that book, somebody else will.
Yeah, or the second they want to use him in a movie or put him in an animated series, then immediately, as these are big companies now, they go, where's Colossus? Oh, he's been dead for a couple of years. No, you're bringing back Colossus.
Yeah, he's in the movie.
Yeah, because he's going to sell.
Well, you know, it's like if you watch an interview with Louis Simonson and they talk about the death of Superman and, you know, they're like, well, people really thought we were going to kill him. And then, like, Marv Wolfman and everyone's like, yeah, what did they think? We weren't going to bring him back? It's like, it's fucking Superman.
Yeah, I remember.
You know, it's like, that's like killing Mickey Mouse. It's like, oh, yeah, fucking, we're never going to produce Mickey Mouse material again. Like, what the fuck
are you
thinking?
I was working in a comic store when that happened and people kept asking, you know, as the questions you get, they're like, they're not going to bring it back. They're never going to bring it back. And I would say to all of them, then why are they still publishing it?
Yeah,
it was
exactly.
Like six issues more of people crying about
Superman.
For a
year, and it's just like there's four Superman titles on the shelf. Yeah, you're right. You're totally right, dude. I've never seen before. He's dead forever.
And then when that fails, we just reboot the whole universe like we're doing with both the Marvel and DC universes in May. So if you can't generate that kind of buzz anymore.
Yeah, just hit the reset button because continuity.
Or maybe you hire a Milo Manara. Maybe you come in with a Killing Joke homage and you go, well, push it a little bit. It's bold, but it's going to get pressed. And maybe I think that a lot of times they're trying to push that needle and it's the times they accidentally push it too far. I think this cover they thought would push it a bit.
It's like when my brother thought he was hitting the brakes on my car and hit the gas and ran into my landlord's garage door.
It was this at the store?
Yeah.
When was this?
I don't know, a couple years ago.
I feel like that's a whole episode.
It wasn't that entertaining.
Has the insurance settlement already taken place?
Oh, no, it's all taken care of.
All right.
Many moons ago.
But, you're absolutely right. And I think, although there should have been some sort of, like, common sense being applied. I mean, whoever it was that was overseeing all the variant covers, at some point they should have said, you know, maybe this isn't the best choice here. You want to do a Killing Joke cover on the cover of Robin?
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know.
You want to do a Death of Jason Todd?
Death of Jason covered
cover of Robin.
Yeah, but it's just maybe it's not, like I said, I don't know. I'm not going to pretend to understand women's point of view because I'm an idiot. So that's something where it's just like, look, if there's a group of people that are super offended by something, it's like racism. Let's talk about this for a second. You know, anytime
this never goes well.
No, this will go well.
You're in the comfortable chair, Elliot.
This is exactly like when white guys on
Sports Center.
Here
he goes.
No, hang on a second. And they say something controversial, and you see all the other white guys like scooting away. If you guys could see this, Elliot's like totally moving away from me.
But
anytime you hear a white guy say, "Well, America's not racist, cause anything." You can't listen to them because they wouldn't know if it was racist or not. And I think that's like this book where it's just like a dude is never going to understand who hasn't been attacked what it's like to go through this whole thing. And I don't know that there's, like Elliot said, there's any way to do a Killing Joke variant for Batgirl without it pushing some of the wrong buttons because of the sensitive material of that book. And I just think it's something where it's like you said, somebody at Editorial DC should have been like, maybe not this cover. But, like, you could have done another Joker variant for Batgirl without doing that story.
Yeah, but yeah, you could have had, if you wanted to do a Joker variant cover, you know what you do? You do a reversal of the Brian Bolland Joker cover. You have Batgirl with the camera saying,
"They did
smile."
They did.
No, and then, yeah, and then in the reflection of that camera, we're talking, make it exactly like the Brian Bolland cover.
Yeah.
Because I saw the one you saw with the, I saw the one where she's like doing the selfie on her phone.
No, but they
had,
the
Harley Quinn,
one
that was a great one,
where
too.
She's saying smile and holding it out. I think it was a variant a month or two ago.
Was it?
Yeah, maybe. Saying,
yeah.
But she's doing that, and then it's like, and you see it's the Joker, like, on the ground, you know, whatever.
But that's the thing, it's like, you know, how many...
But then the Joker's not scary, and that dilutes his brand.
See, that, and... Oh my God! And that's one of the things that, since we're going in that direction now,
that really,
back to the fan bros who they're going, well, you know, she's supposed to be scared of the Joker because if she's not scared of the Joker, that makes him less threatening. Then she's less of a hero. I'm like, what kind of backwards logic is that?
Yeah.
It's like in wrestling, you know, in wrestling where you always have the one wrestler who's got to put over everybody else.
Yeah.
So if he gets to win a match, you know, he makes everybody else look bad, supposedly?
Right. Yeah.
What?
And it's just like, it's something too where it's just like, you know, the argument of a Joker's supposed to be this like psychotic, scary, murderous thing. It's like, okay, that's the current era Joker. How about the Joker that was just like, you know, kind of running around in like a Joker mobile and like would just like rob like a car factory and like the
steal pies.
The Dick Sprang Joker. Remember? From like the 40s. Yeah. This was like the murderous Joker. This was like the goofy, the Cesar Romero.
Oh yeah, Joker who still has a mustache on.
Yeah,
his
it's
makeup,
just like,
you know.
Well, the character, it's like Batman. We've talked before, Batman currently is working as this like dark character and such.
Everyone thinks that Batman is the Frank Miller Batman.
Yeah.
Every right. Batman before the Frank Miller Batman never existed, which just...
It's horrible.
Including you know? Like and, the Danny O'Neill, you know, Neil Adams Batman, which was also
a detective.
Dark. Right. Marshall Rogers.
Right.
You know? Or the Brave and the Bold. We were just watching it on Netflix. Me and John were at the store on Monday watching it. And I thought it was a show when it came out. I didn't really get into it because I was young and stupid. And then I went back.
It was like 5 years ago.
Yeah, well... I was younger than I am now, and
younger than you are now. Yesterday
and 10 minutes ago, but it's something where it's just like, you know, I watch it now and it's just like, this is actually like a perfect Batman show because they were doing everything with Batman in that show that we haven't seen in any of their cartoons since like the Super Friends with quality. So I think it's something where to say any one character only fits into this one box diminishes the characters. These characters have been around for like 75 years. There's 75 different versions of the characters depending on what year, what writer. I mean, how many people have written and drawn Joker stories? For every person that's worked on this book, there's been that many different takes on that character.
And I always liked the Joker, which you don't see anymore. You used to see in the 80s was, actually the way Bruce Timm did it was that he was really funny.
Yeah.
And it was his way of disarming you. And you'd go, oh, you know, he's not that bad. He's actually really funny. And he'd be personable and he'd do crowd work with you and he'd change the material. And then as soon as you let your guard down, then he would kill you.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't have to be this demon from the and, you know, that which kind of gets into what Scott Snyder's hinting at an Endgame. It's like, oh, maybe he's not even human at all.
Well, I haven't read it in a while, but have I heard correctly? Joker got a hold of a Lazarus pit.
Yeah, I guess the rumor is in the newest Endgame story is that they're possibly hinting at the idea that they haven't mentioned a Lazarus pit, but the idea that Joker's been around for like 400 years.
So he's more of an immortal then.
Yes.
Yeah, there was a story. Chuck Dixon actually wrote a Legends of Dark Knight story that teamed up Joker and Ra's al Ghul where he went into the Lazarus pit.
Oh.
But there is this.
So he's essentially Wolverine now.
Yes, well, they're hinting at it. I hope not, but that's what they're hinting at. If that ends up being what they're doing, Snyder,
you know, Scott
losing my money.
Scott Snyder has this way of taking this huge leap and then
pulls
kinda,
the rug out from under you.
But then kind of pulls back. Like the whole thing about Lincoln March and Court of Owls is like, oh, I'm actually Bruce Wayne's brother. And then at the end, it's like, yeah, probably not.
Yeah.
So I think
I cut off everyone's face. Nah, not really.
Yeah, I think that's where we're going with with Endgame.
Okay. Yeah, but that's some crazy shit that happened in the last issue to Alfred.
Oh, yeah. And apparently some crazy shit's going to happen after Convergence because he's going to be a bunny armor.
Yeah. It's,
he looks like the Tick.
That's dumb.
He does look like the Tick.
If he acts like the Tick, that'd actually be pretty cool.
I hope he says spoon. It's right? Like, even if it's in a line of dialogue.
He's like eating cereal.
Like, Alfred, hand me that spoon with your
But
one.
He screams spoon.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know.
Okay, so let's help people kind of get a little grasp. This is for you, for the fan bros out there. Fan bros,
pay attention.
You're listening to this right now.
I am so hashtagging fan bros this episode.
I'm coining this term. I'm making
this
it happen.
I like this a lot. It does separate from the guys who are just like, hey, yeah, relax.
And to be fair, there are a lot of guys, and you can say that come into the store, that just want to see violence and explosions,
right.
And they're not looking any deeper than that, and I feel like that's a fan bro.
Yeah. Fan bros. Okay, so
they're easy to point out.
This is for you fan bros out there who are listening right now and you're going, man, I don't get it, man. It's just a cover. Why are you getting all upset about a cover? I should be able to have any kind of cover I want. It's America. Okay. let me propose this cover to you, my friend. My fan bro friend. It's a Captain America variant, okay? We're gonna this is gonna come out when the new Captain America Civil War movie comes out, right? And it's gonna be a Red Skull variant, all right? So Marvel month is gonna be Red Skull month, and on the day and the when that Captain America book comes out, it's gonna have the Red Skull with his arm around a little girl who's crying. Why is she crying? Behind her, you see the concentration camp the Red Skull is sending her to.
Yeah.
Remember, the Red Skull was a Nazi.
Yep.
and the Red Skull was very much involved with what the Nazis did.
Yeah, this is a guy that was...
He was not an ambivalent Nazi.
He was too eccentric for Hitler.
Yes.
So it's like they could not get worse than this guy.
Yeah, and even in the later periods, he's kind of worse than a Nazi because they don't want to have Nazis in the books or in the movies.
Yeah.
So they're just like... Red Skull was too crazy. Exactly. Red Skull was too crazy for Hitler. So he's doing crazy stuff
crazy
over here.
Crazier stuff, right. So now, my fan bro friend, do you expect anyone to be offended by that cover? Do you think that anyone's going to like the idea of being reminded of one of the most horrific periods in history, in human history? Having a fictional character glorify
the Holocaust,
a terrible, terrible, real tragedy that happens to human beings.
Yeah.
That happened to human beings. Does your variant cover mean that much to you that you have to have that image on it?
Right.
So if you can say yes to that, guess what? You're a fan, bro.
Yeah.
I love that your fan bro is both drunk and angry and high and laid back at the same time.
Dude. Wait, it's two different fan bros.
He's like, yeah.
Just like they're the ones that take turns on the internet.
Yeah. I thought it was one guy.
There's a lot of guys.
I thought he was just like, my country, right or wrong, dude.
Right or wrong. Dude, man, those girls, they need to like chill out. Now they're wrong. All of them. So I know I'm not trying to draw an exact parallel here. I mean,
but it's an example of like, this cover's offensive. If you don't understand that, do you understand how this cover's offensive? Like, it's hard, I think, to explain to people, like I said, who can't relate to an experience. Maybe they don't have, thoughts. So they have a hard time imagining why that would be offensive to somebody.
Dude, can you hand me another page of that Harley Quinn book?
Yeah.
Roll it for me, man. Roll it for me.
I'll get this eventually. I do think it's something where, it does come from a place of ignorance, but to be that ignorant is kind of astonishing.
And I'll even go so far, you don't understand it? Okay, cool. I'll even give you that.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just difficult to understand another person's human experience.
Yes, absolutely.
But come on, how about a little sensitivity about
it? Exactly.
You know what? This really bothers this person. It bothers them. Don't get all, oh man, no man, it doesn't bother me. You need to get over it, okay? If I'm not bothered by it, get over it.
Yeah.
The internet is full of people that say, I'm okay with it, therefore everyone's okay with it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that are doing polls of one on a message board. And it was nobody wouldn't like this. It was like, because why? Because
I don't like it. And it's just like, that's not exactly true, dude. Because, everyone is on the internet now. So it's just like, you and all your idiot friends might all sit around and agree. But that's not the point of view of, everyone on Earth.
Well, and the other thing to remember about geeks is that we're all slightly introverted. And some people are that way because they're very sensitive.
Yeah.
And they don't want to get attacked. But other people are that way just because they don't understand other people.
Yeah, you do get a lot of, people would never leave their basement too often, I think. And I think the majority of the people, probably the most vocal people who are, just get over it. The nerd bros are probably the dudes who just never really get out of their basement and socialize with other human beings and realize this is appropriate and this is not appropriate and what offends people and what doesn't offend people. And they don't know where, the social line is of, hey, we're all humans.
That's what makes conventions so interesting.
Yeah.
Because you meet people and sometimes...
It's a good blend.
I mean, C2E2 is coming up. We met Elliot at C2E2 and it was like, oh, great. Let's have a conversation. Now let's continue this conversation.
Yeah.
But some people are just like, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Yeah, you do get a lot of the knuckle draggers in the stores, on occasion.
That is a minority, right?
Oh yeah,
we don't want
to
get
sympathetic to the knuckle dragger.
Yeah,
I'm just saying.
I would say that's a good, the really good point is that the majority of the customers are not only normal, average, adjusted people. It's more diverse, I think, than I've ever seen it. To where it's just like you're getting more kids, you're getting more adults, you're getting boys, you're getting girls.
And also, you're in a very family friendly area.
Yeah,
so you're not getting. You're probably getting a different demographic than when you worked in, yeah, like...
Yeah, and it's a different demographic, too, than they're probably getting at, like, Challengers, I think, where they're in the city, you know, there's definitely, you know, depending on, obviously, what neighborhood you're in. But I think it's something where, you know, the idea that, oh, girls don't read comic books, it's like, yeah, I stopped believing that, you know, when I was, like, 14 and was going to the comic book store and there were girls in the comic books. You know what I mean? It's like, so it's something where it's just, like, it's such an old-fashioned idea. Mm-hmm. It seems like whoever has that idea isn't even really probably going to comic book stores, because... I've been to 90% of the stores in the city, and every time there's boys, there's girls, there's dudes, there's women, it's a huge mix of people.
Girls working in most comic book stores.
Yeah,
I go to
and
now.
That's something where it's just something, like I said, it's such an antiquated idea, but it seems like the internet is so far behind on it, where it's like all these people are like, well, girls don't read comics. It's like, well, fucking, do you read comics? Do you have any idea?
Now, these are guys that don't know any girls.
Yeah.
And, so they certainly don't know any that are reading comics.
They just expect that none of them are reading comics, which is insane.
You know, poll of one.
And then back to the bit about, as we said in the very beginning, the market is changing. We see that the market is expanding.
Yeah.
Things that you could have done in the 80s and 90s aren't going to fly now because you have different sensibilities in the market with this new audience that you're attracting.
Yeah. I mean, I was just reading the second volume of Avengers, and it's Stan Lee's still writing, but who's ghosting him?
Roy Thomas. In,
And there's like several issues in a row, and it's pretty painful to read. It's like Wasp will be like, oh, if only I wasn't a woman, Hank would have figured out how to turn this switch off. And it's just like, just really kind of like misogynist, sexist, like comments coming from like the Wasp, coming from Hank. Like everyone's kind of like, I mean, it's blatantly sexist.
There's
and it's
a lot of that
just like,
in Fantastic Four, too.
Oh, yeah. It's like, read it's like you read the way he's like talking to Sue in those early couple issues, and it's just like, what the fuck was Stan Lee talking to his wife about? You know, it's like, what, you know, what's going on behind the scenes?
Yeah, I was reading the latest volume of Masterworks for Fantastic Four, which is like mid-70s, and Roy Thomas is writing it.
Yeah.
And
at one
point in that, they ask, like, why aren't you the Invisible Woman? She's like, well, I'm not going to get into all politics and Gloria Steinem. Invisible Girl's good enough for me.
Yeah.
And, like, and then I was reading in the foreword, and Roy Thomas was going through a divorce when he wrote that.
Right. So it's a little telling, and I think it's something where it's just like, you know, to Elliot's point, you know, the comics have changed, the markets have changed. If they wrote the dialogue for the Wasp for any female character in any book on the shelf now, it would be, the backlash would be insane, because it is inappropriate, it is ridiculous, and it's demeaning. And I think it's something where, you know, like Elliot said, it's just like, you just can't get away with these crazy covers anymore, because it's like, it is offensive. Like, there's definitely, this many people aren't pretending to be upset about something just to shake the, you know, rock the boat or whatever. It's just like, it's a real issue.
Okay, I know we're running long here, but let me throw another hypothetical at you guys. Just speaking of from a purely marketing standpoint, when we're talking about covers, let's not go so much into offensive covers, but covers that might be questionable. Okay, let's look at Star Wars right now. Yeah, if you saw me, this is on my Facebook page, and I took a poll, kind of an informal poll about it. So I don't know if you read this or not, but I proposed two covers to you.
Okay.
Now, imagine this is the first Star Wars comic you're going to read. Either you're going to read it, or it's the first Star Wars comic you're going to buy for your kid.
Okay.
It's the first one you see. This is going to be the first cover they ever see. For the Star Wars book, it's an image of Luke Skywalker crying as he stands over the smoldering bodies of his Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru. Okay.
And whether or not we'd buy it or be excited?
Would you buy that book?
No.
That's the cover.
No.
Why not?
Because I think if it's Star Wars and I'm a kid, or I'm buying it for a kid, or even if I'm interested in it, you want a heroic cover. You want a cover like one of those cool montage covers of like the Death Star and Vader's helmet and Luke with a sword. It's like, you know, him crying over the charred ruins of his parents is just like, what kind of
but that's human. Wouldn't you cry if you were there? I mean, mind you, we'd get to see a scene that didn't even occur in the movie. It's showing Luke as vulnerable. Shouldn't he cry over the bodies of his dead surrogate parents?
Yeah, and I see what you're doing there.
And to be fair, to play by those rules, this would have to be the variant cover.
The variant cover,
and
yes.
And in that case, I would skip that like I skip most variant covers.
Yeah, because I just think it's something where it's just like, Nah, you if it's a, you the whole point of covers is like for the artist to be sane. The artist to just be like, I'm gonna draw the coolest shit I can't draw
and
normally.
And to let you know what the book is about.
Right.
Which I think is another way this Batgirl cover fails is, as we said, I don't know what the plot of next month's Batgirl is going to be, but Joker's not even in it.
Presumably, it has nothing to do with the Joker. Even if it is right. a tie-in,
just the same way Flash had nothing to do with all, the Harley Quinn yeah. cover that I bought 2 months ago.
Exactly. And that's the thing. I think it's something where, you know, I would want a book that encapsulates more of what, you know, like I said, obviously, you know, him being upset his parents or his aunt and uncle are murdered. Clearly, he has an emotional reaction to that, but I don't think it's something where it's just like, that doesn't really need to be on the cover. That's a story element. The cover, like I said, I want Luke
Unless
with like a
blaster.
The whole
issue is about how he gets through
saber.
That moment.
There you go. And there, my friend, is the exact one of the main problems I had with that cover.
Yeah.
It's not even a story element from the book itself. It's like, like you said, Joker doesn't even appear. And to me, it's a misrepresentation of the entire character.
Yeah.
So fan bros, that's also, it's not censorship, guys.
Yeah.
It's called
seriously.
Marketing.
Yes.
The greatest thing in the world.
This week. I started listening to an audiobook because I'm in the car an hour and a half every day, so I don't read books anymore, but now I'm on Audible and I'm listening to them. I just got Difficult Men, which is about the showrunners from The Sopranos up through Breaking Bad.
What's that mean, showrunners?
The showrunner is who is really in charge. It's usually the creator of the show and the main writer. So in The Sopranos, it's David Chase.
So it's literally the people who run the show.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, but they're first and foremost writers. So yeah. With Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul, it's Vince Gilligan.
Okay.
With 30 Rock or Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, it's Tina Fey. I'm fascinated by it. I'm only about 2 hours into 10 hours, and I had to stop. In the car this morning, I had to stop it, call my dad, and go, you need to read this book. And he was like, I just read it last month.
Oh, nice.
It's really fascinating. Right now, it's very deep in The Sopranos, which was a show that I have issues with. I loved the first couple seasons. It did something that emotionally broke me. Oh, actually, thematically, it was when Lorraine Bracco got raped, and there was, spoiler, but it's 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And then there was no follow-up to that I kind of emotionally divorced myself from it. But I can accept its place in television of, we wouldn't have Better Call Saul, we wouldn't have Mad Men without it.
Wouldn't have happened without it.
Yeah, but it's really interesting because it goes deep into, like, who David Chase is and, like, where he came from, but it also traces back where television started, and they go like back to Hill Street Blues and talk about how it started there and changed. And I'm just riveted by it. And I can't wait until it gets to shows that I really love. Cause, I know it's going to talk to Matthew Weiner about Mad Men, and I know it's going to talk to Vince Gilligan about Breaking Bad. But it's almost like 5 biographies in one book.
Oh, wow.
And as well as like the making of all these shows and marketing. And it's great. It's one of the few like non-genre things, because there's not a genre show in there. Like, they're not going to talk about Walking Dead on this.
Right.
But I'm really, really enjoying it. And the author's name is escaping me. But it's called Difficult Men. It's on Audible. It's probably the best book I've listened to since Marvel Comics: The Untold Story.
It was a great book.
Who's reading it?
I don't know it's like a guy who's reading it, not a big name. Mm. It's not like James Gandolfini was doing this or Bryan Cranston. It's somebody who's got this kind of gruff voice, and he kind of leans into the voices a little bit. Like, he has his David Chase voice, and he has his Matthew Weiner voice, and it's nonfiction, so there's not a lot of dialogue in it. But there's more quotations from interviews. But he's got this, like, gravitas, this grittiness to his voice, which really sells this story that these are guys that aren't, they're not slick Hollywood types. They're not businessmen, you know. They're hard-boiled, like, noir writers. Mm. And he's got that kind of tone to it. So I even recommend the audiobook, nice. Even over the print book.
Yeah, I need to do more audiobooks. I drive a lot in the car. I may have mentioned this on before, but there are 2 volumes, so if I did and forgot, forgive me. JSA Omnibus by Jeff Johns. I finished the second volume, and it's a Geoff Johns obviously has been writing comics for forever, and he does a lot of these issues with David Goyer, who does a lot of the DC TV properties, I believe. And what's interesting is I like Flash, I like Green Lantern, so I've read both of his volumes on that, and I've read a Superman Monthly. But I never cared about the JSA. They were always like goofy costumes, kind of goofy powers, didn't really know much about them. And then got the omnibus on kind of a whim, because, you know, I've, you know, a great discount at Diamond and
wholesale.
Yeah, you know, wholesale, it's hard to walk away from. So, but it's awesome. It makes his Justice League Monthly book that much more disappointing, because he nails every character in the JSA. It's like perfect characterization. They all read different as different people with a different set of experiences. They all interact with each other in different ways. He's bringing back like Golden Age villains that could not be lamer and make some actual credible threat. He gets into like political stuff where they invade like a country. It's like all kinds of really, really cool stuff. It's an awesome how to write a team book. They did a crossover with the JLA, and it shows the interaction between the two teams and what that's like. And, you know, he really does research, too, because he's bringing in all these story arcs and all these characters that probably at this point are over 75 years of continuity and kind of making sense of it all. This is all, like, post-crisis but pre-New 52 stuff. And I guess there is a third omnibus on the way.
Will that complete it?
That'll be the end of his run. Yeah, it's a substantial... I mean, we're talking, like... It's like a foot and a half on my bookshelf when it's all said and done. They're huge volumes. But like I said, it's just like the membership rotates from, you know, a couple issues to a couple issues. You know, it's not everyone, you know, good job, Green Lantern. Yes, excellent job, Flash. Like, people actually have conflicts on the team. People leave the team, come back. Like, they kick guys off the team. Like, it's something where it's just like, it's as much drama and, you know, personal interactions as it is like these high concept, like the universe is at stake, kind of huge, huge moments. And then quiet moments of like our man getting a chance to talk to his father who had died during final crisis or final night or whatever it was a couple years ago, the X-Stand thing.
Final night.
Yeah. So there is a lot of really, really cool stuff in there. And like I said, it's something where I could not have been less interested in the JSA. And it's just like, I'm kind of disappointed there's only one more volume.
I remember reading those books when they first ran as a monthly, and I remember going, no one will ever write the JSA like James Robinson would, because after reading the Golden Age,
that was a great book.
Best. I said, no one's ever going to write JSA like James Robinson. Then Geoff Johns came along and just blew me away.
Yeah, yeah, and that's, like I said, it's something where, you know, and people always say, oh, what's your favorite character? And the phase of me having favorite characters ended years ago. Now it's favorite writers, favorite artists. I'll read, you know, I've read really great Thor stories, and I've read horrific Thor stories. So it's like, you know, it's any character can work. You just have to find a creator who can come in, take a character, and have their own personal touch on it. You know, like, you know, Green Arrow was boring until Denny O'Neill came in and made him this like hippie, and it's like it totally worked. And it's something where it's just like there's no good Green Arrow story before that. You know, some of the Jack Kirby stuff looks cool, but it's like, ah, the stories were shit.
Yeah, he's kind of Batman before.
Yeah, and I think it's something where, you know, a writer can come on, take a cast of characters that maybe no one else really wanted to touch, and just nails it, knocks it out of the park.
And my greatest thing in the world, and this is kind of dated. Everyone's getting on me now. I guess I'm a year late on this. But I finally picked up Beck's Grammy Award-winning album, Morning Phase.
Oh, yeah, I got it after he won the Grammy.
I finally picked it up. It was on Google Play for like $1.
Really?
Wow. I couldn't beat that.
Like $10 for it.
Yeah, but it's on Google. And I have not been able to stop listening to it.
That's awesome.
And it's like, I was going, holy shit, this is the guy who did I'm a Loser Baby. I mean, I've heard a lot of Beck stuff before, even after that. But this is probably one of the most impressive albums. So Kanye, I'm going to let you finish. Okay. But Beck's album was the greatest record in the world. Beyonce ought to sit her ass down. Because it is a really... Because
he does everything in it, right?
He does everything.
He does the whole vocals, everything.
There's some incredible soundscapes. And it's you sit there, you just listen to it. It's like... it reminds me of like those Pink Floyd albums where they're like concept albums. And it's like this whole... There's like a feeling to the whole thing that, you know, go from beginning to end. And if you listen to it on repeat... Which is what will sometimes happen on my phone. You know, it just starts over again.
Yeah.
You can't tell that it's the album started over again.
Oh wow!
So it's that cohesive.
Yeah, it's like album. That, like circular. That's really
yeah.
cool.
Yeah, it's a great album. Have you ever heard his album Sea Change?
No, I haven't. And I'm being told again. I'm late to the party here. I need to get in there.
They're kind of bookends. So you. That's probably if you like this album, because that was the first when I heard Morning Phase, I was like, oh, this is his sequel 10 years later to Sea Change, which was my favorite Beck album. If I will give you MP3s of that.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah,
and then my other favorite thing in the world right now are the Pulp Fiction Mini Mates that John gave me when I arrived. So thank you so much.
You gotta love Diamond. The 10 years of Mini Mates.
Yeah, for real.
The Diner Showdown. With all my favorite characters from Pulp Fiction, so those are cool. Yeah, and I have a picture of those on my Instagram.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, cool. Well, how can we find you on Instagram and on Twitter and everything else?
Of course, you can always find me on Twitter where I'm getting into fights with fan bros, at Elliot Serrano with two L's, two T's, and two R's. Same on Instagram, Elliot's at Elliot Serrano, two L's, two T's, two R's, and my blog is geektome.net.
And you can follow me at Not In My Book on Twitter. That is the Caffeinated Comics official feed. I believe I'm also Not In My Book on Instagram, but I never take any pictures. If I take pictures, they're on the Facebook page, which you can also like.
There you go.
The Caffeinated Comics Facebook page. We had a lot of pictures last week from the Oh Yeah Party. Which,
great party.
Again, a lot of fun. Elliot was there. We had a ball.
And Steven and I got into a big fight.
We did.
There's a picture of that fight
there is.
On the Facebook page.
We'll You're do a podcast to, and about
we,
that in the future.
Yeah, and we had signed Hellboy beer.
Yeah.
I got
yeah.
no pictures of Mike Mignola.
He's probably in the background of one of those.
He's somewhere.
Peering around somebody's shoulder.
Yeah, there's a lot of pictures of Art and Franco in the background.
Yeah, they're there. They're recognizable fellows.
And Steven?
I'm not available in the digital world. You have to come find me in real life at 19 South LaGrange Road.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.